Interview with Mooni Singha, Nayland, 31st July 1966.
I think to take the question chronologically, you know, I start from the year 1924 and brought it upwards to the sort of modern, to the last 2 decades. And what sort of training did you receive when you joined the civil service? Did the principal assistant or the colonial secretary give you any idea of what the job was like?
No. They said you are
did you go out and search it with the job of agent?
Not very much.
Who was the government agent? Oh, I see. And the OA? How did you pick up the job there?
Well, it's a
wouldn't you have liked some sort of training like they had at Oxford and Cambridge in that year? In the 1930s, all civil servants sent from England were given some sort of training. In your time, not even the British civil servants, they didn't get any training either. This is working.
Hello? Hello?
It is. I find it rather strange that you were not taken out and searched by the GA. I wonder whether there was some sort of racial question here. Because in many other places, they didn't take the cadet out.
That is, when I entered medical, I used to go
to the GA. Who was that?
Brain.
Oh, he's an interesting personality.
Yes, very interesting. And
did you pick up a lot from him?
Oh, yes. I learned a lot about that.
And what was his policy in medical? On land tenure and land question, what did he favor?
He wanted to help the peasants as much as possible, which is a small scheme.
Help them in what way? I mean, the scheme.
Yes, he was small enough to them.
Yes, but didn't they have such small holdings in other districts too?
Where I was in the city first, they always had in case of emergency for clearing payment.
Yes, I was going to ask you about this chain of policy in the NCP, because that was the area of conflict between the GA on the one hand and shall I say Freeman on the other hand?
I remember when I was in the court, I used to learn the work there. Freeman used to come, sometimes he used to pay the fines for these people.
And what was the policy followed by seeing one another? And why did they do it?
Well, I suppose they must have got instruction from Colombo. I can't say, but Timo always prosecuted people if they cared to pay land, chainers.
I mean, was it totally prohibited?
No, some very poor people were given a bit, but they used to share more than the amount given.
I see. What was your opinion on this question of restricting China?
Well, of course, I didn't think very much, but still I thought it was a bit too much for them. Every time they cleared the land, that it became, after a few years, it became quite unfertile.
So, did you feel that CIMO and the government were trying to sort of restrict China as much as possible, but at the same time taking into consideration the human factor, I mean the need for food?
Oh yes, I think.
They did take that into consideration.
Because they were not so sympathetic to the villagers as freemen.
Mm-hmm.
They were a bit sympathetic, but still, freemen of course wanted China to be human rights needed.
But I was wondering how far the government was looking at this thing from European eyes. Because the Europeans shifting cultivation like China cultivation was something distasteful.
Oh yes. I don't think the GA liked the idea at all.
Can I have
the key of
that
Rio Fusion room
they want to
get
into the firing?
Yes. I don't know where the key is. I was not told.
What sort of man was he?
Well, he was a sort of... He didn't mix that much with the local people.
Mm-hmm. Tennyson?
Tennyson was not so much, but he also was a little bit against the villagers, against the people.
Rather aloof?
Yes. Seymour, of course, was married to a very rich lady. I suppose that account for which I don't know.
Mm-hmm. For instance, did they invite you for dinner at all?
Oh yes. They invited us for lunch and dinner. Not dinner, lunch.
Mm-hmm. And regarding the China question, was government policy influenced by a feeling that Kurakkan was not an Alashin food?
No, I think their main object was these people are cultivating land without permission. Why should they do it? And they were prosecuted.
But this is an officious attitude. What if they needed the food?
That I don't think they considered very much because they thought they can do some other work and get their food, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Growing paddy or something like that.
And how did you find Freeman himself as a man?
Well, he was very good only. He was very sympathetic to the people.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when elections came on, they contested this, he and somebody else contested. Or most villagers came bearing, bring a green leaf, saying, we are for Freeman. He was very popular.
Was he rather gullible and impractical?
No, because he had also been a commentator in there.
Mm-hmm. No, I was wondering whether he was an emotional type and so sympathetic that he was misled by the people and they played him out.
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Not so sympathetic as all that to make him gullible.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had worked in the area, knew their condition, the state of the people, how poor they were.
And what was Brain's attitude to the question of China permits in the Eastern Province?
We didn't have much China permits there.
Why? There was no demand for it?
No. Because most of the people in that in the Eastern Province were Muslims, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they had plenty of paddy fields to cultivate.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't bother about China.
Now, in granting these allotments to the Muslims, to the peasants in the Eastern Province, did Brain impose special conditions?
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
The usual conditions were, if you were given account to the government side, rules.
And who were you under in Bajula?
Bajula, I was under three or four people. Pesting was first. then Millington, Burden.
Mm-hmm. Yes, how do you find them in their attitude to the...
Millington was one who was very sympathetic to the people. Then Burden last Festing. Festing had nothing much to hear, sort of. I think his father was a general, wasn't he?
A general?
I think so.
He was a bit aloof, person?
Yes. But one thing he did was, when he used to go through the chapel every day himself,
mm-hmm.
and he used to get a piano who knew nothing about English to open them and give them to him. And he was fairly efficient in singing. Where the brain was very efficient in Tamil.
Mm-hmm. Was Millington a very fussy type?
No, but a chap who was rather nervous, afraid of making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he got involved in some forest case. I can't remember exactly.
Yes, and he...
committed season in the end.
Mm-hmm. And how did you fare with the European population in Bajula? Did you find yourself in difficult position?
No, most of them, except for the official class.
No, the planting.
No, planting people, of course, we used to meet them in the club, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Club.
You didn't find them too demanding or overbearing?
No.
Mm-hmm. I have been told that in the planting districts, the GAs are quite often, even at this stage, rather biased towards the planting interest. Did you feel that this was so?
Not Millington, I think. Probably Festing was, I think.
Burton?
No, Burton was not.
So it really depended on the individual GA?
Yes.
Who was the OA there?
First of all, it was this chap, Tennyson.
Oh, I see.
Then it was Bond.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the civil service in general terms and wondering whether you felt that even the European officials were too aloof from the educated Ceylon. Did you feel that was so? It's a question of European clubs and...
Well, the European clubs, of course, very exclusive. And now, when I was proposed to the club, it was the GA and Dr. Senior surgeon there who proposed my name. Ordinary people are not taking.
Mm-hmm.
And except for the officials, very few people were allowed to come in.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was wondering whether, sort of thinking in political terms, the fact that most of the European officials didn't move very closely with Ceylonese meant that they were not aware of local opinion, or should I say
They didn't bother about the local opinion, because at that time it was not independent or no state council. There were just a few handful of people taking part in politics.
Mm-hmm. I mean, did you find a difference between those European officials who had come after the First World War and those who had come before?
Well, I didn't meet many of them. I was not there myself,
mm-hmm.
before the World War.
But, I mean, Festing and others had joined before, the older ones,
mm-hmm.
whereas the younger lot had come after serving in the war. And I wonder...
Well, they were apart from...
No, Tennyson and Bond.
Those are the only two. I don't think they were in the war at all. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
These, of course, have been fairly senior people.
Don't you think that if you had some sort of course in Colombo before you were sent into the field, a course which discussed general problems and like the chain of problem and land tenure and principles of law and philosophy and things like that, and practical subjects too, whether that course would have
helped. It might have helped. But at that, in those days, I don't think that prayer class very much concerned with the people. They had only to do a job of work, that is, govern the country. That's all they didn't bother about the people.
In fact, did you feel that the British rule, that is, before the 1931 and before Sena Naik and others came in as ministers, did you feel that it lacked purpose, that they just administered efficiently what they were doing, but had no drive, no sense of direction?
I don't think many people bothered about that at that time.
And what did you think of the legal system which they had set up? Did you feel that it was too complicated and too alien for the peasantry, especially in outlying areas?
Well, of course, the legal system then here was the same as in England.
Yes. So I was wondering whether it was something that was foreign to the people and cumbersome and slow and even perhaps ineffective.
Well, what else could they have done except follow that? I mean, they had their proctors and they kept quiet. These proctors, lawyers argued the case for them, that's all. They didn't know much about it.
Who is the they? You mean
the villagers.
I was thinking of the alternative system of
Gansabha.
Yes, on a larger scale with wider powers.
But even in the Gansabha, the president of the village tribunal, who it was, followed the same thing. They didn't know much, it was all spoken in English.
Even in the Gansabha, it was?
Sometimes, they did in English. Otherwise, they used to manage like English.
But there were no lawyers allowed there?
No.
You see, this thing, process was so slow. The villager had to travel to town, spend some time. The thing might be postponed. Whereas justice has to be quick.
It was never quick. Even now it's not quick. Because villagers had to travel for miles sometimes for a case.
That's why I raised the question. And I was also wondering whether in the case of land disputes, a judge seated on the bench could get to the heart of some disputes. I'm not thinking in terms of every case, but many cases, could he decide without seeing the land and without seeing the configuration of the land and without knowing something about the ins and outs of a village and why there was this, how this case had arisen?
No, I don't think he could have done that. But they never bothered to go to the village itself and find out about the land or why inquire from other people why they are fighting about it.
They rarely did.
No, rarely did.
They had power to do so, hadn't they?
Oh yes, if you like to go and see me.
So wouldn't the failure to do this lead to wrong decisions sometimes? Wasn't the district judge often making a case?
I suppose they did, I don't know. Now, have you read The Village in the Jungle?
Yes, I was thinking of a case like that, you see.
You know, that man there used to come all the way. The other people used to tell lies. And judge had to believe some one side or the other. But he didn't go to the land to find out.
And quite often a land dispute is an expression of some other enmity.
Yes. Because he doesn't go right into that point and all.
No, I have been told by a settlement officer, an Englishman, how often when he knew the inside story of a case because of his settlement work, he knew that the decision was wrong. Because he had seen all the deeds of the village, whereas the judge had only seen some. And the evidence put before the judge was inadequate.
No, yes. They only, even the lawyers, they only say what is beneficial to them.
Mm-hmm.
They won't say anything else.
I was very interested in the fact that you had done settlement work for 1 year.
No, I did for about 1935. I came to from Jaffna to Colombo.
Oh, not 1 year, for
nearly till
6 years.
Yes,
till the war.
Yes, till the war.
I suppose you received some sort of training here by going out with the settlement officer.
No, I went with the one of the my senior assistant settlement officer, that is anywhere,
mm-hmm.
for a short time. And then after that I had to go on my own.
Mm-hmm. And what principles did Senivarathna instill into you?
Because we had to get the deeds, go through the deeds carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And see whether it was possible to decide on those. If not, we listened to the other villagers or the headman and then find out.
Mm-hmm. What were the aims of settlement work? Well, I know the process, because there was a preliminary inquiry, a survey, then another inquiry in situ, and decision made.
Mm.
Land held for less than 5 years was declared crown, was it?
Mm.
I mean, encroachments for less than 5 years were declared crown, was it?
If you can't prove your title, the land is closed down.
Mm-hmm. But if you can't prove your title and at the same time you have resided on a plot and developed it for 10-15 years, what did you do?
So they will take that into consideration when you are allotting the lands.
Mm-hmm.
As regards yourself and another, if you have been in position for a long time, we will naturally give to you.
Mm-hmm. And what if you found that Mr. X, a planter, or Mr. Y, some outsider, some mudalali, had taken up some village pasture land or bought up some diga married claims, you see, some dubious claims from the village, and cultivated it for 10-15 years, by the time you had arrived.
Then that means you think that if mudalali has taken somebody some village's land,
say he had bought up some crown land or land which held on dubious title by a villager, you see, really crown land to which a villager had no clear title, bought it from the villager for a small sum, and he had been there for 10-12 years and developed the land, and at that moment you arrived on the scene. But the land was really necessary for the village.
If the villager had taken that land, cultivated with a dubious title, if it was crown land,
mm-hmm.
he'd reject that claim, his claim, and make it crown.
Mm-hmm.
At least I used to do that.
Mm-hmm. You didn't settle it on the occupant, say, the planter, for a further sum of money?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I did wrong, he had the right to appeal to the settlement officer.
Mm-hmm. Would it be correct to say that you were expected to protect the villagers, the village and the peasant as much as possible?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was doing most of my work in the Kandin district.
What area?
About that Kalagadar area, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Kalagadara, Matugama, all that side. Sometimes it's very, there are so many claims to a plot of land. There are hardly any crown land left in those villages.
Yes.
Not even half an acre for a cemetery.
Oh, I see.
No, it was terrible.
You didn't have to decide between different private claims?
I had to, most of us, in that, say, in Kalagadara area.
But, so you even decided as to who the owner was?
Yes, I had to. Because there's very little crown land there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was claiming the land. There were small plots, half an acre. That's only in the Matri district.
But how could your decision be binding? Because if it was private land, they had to settle that in court.
No, they prefer sometimes to come to us and get the title.
Mm-hmm.
They are not satisfied with our title, they can go to the court.
Mm-hmm. Were there many petitions and protests against your decision?
I don't think so. I can't remember, but...
Mm-hmm. Would it be correct to describe this work of settlement as a sort of gigantic partition case?
Well, it comes to that. Actually, I had to decide between all these small plots and these two villages.
In some of these claims, wasn't it the fact that property normally held in undivided shares was being fought for by the...
Yes, yes.
From your work in these areas, did you know if chaina cultivation was essential for their subsistence in that area?
In under NCP it was. Yes.
Not in the canyon area, did the chaina?
I didn't do culture. Chaina was there, I only settled on work.
Yes, but when you were doing the settlement work, did you come across any lands which could be described as chaina lands?
No. In the canyon district, most of it was plant land.
That's garden or paddy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I wonder how important chaina cultivation was in the Candian Highlands.
No, I don't think they did much chaina cultivation there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only in most of it in the NCP because they very little subsistence for them.
What about Sabargamo, past Sabargamo?
I didn't do it there.
Mm-hmm. What was your impression on the question of, on the general question, historical question of the plantations having taken up the peasant's land?
Planted?
Yes, in the canyon area.
Well, most of the planters in that area, huge estates, that we couldn't decide because the surveyor had said that it is over 20 years of trees over 20 years, and they declared it private themselves.
That's the surveyor?
Mm.
So didn't you have to check on what the surveyor did?
No. We only had to inquire where it was under, where they had said it is not private land. I mean, private in the sense that it's not over 10, under 20 years.
Oh, I see. Were the surveyors susceptible to bribe?
Oh, that I can't say.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering whether this the expansion of plantations and the sale of land by the Crown had meant that the villagers lost some of their land, you see.
They must have, I don't know, but they may have lost their land or sold, that's the point.
Did you feel, in going into these deeds, did you find that sometimes temple sort of managers of temple lands or Nindagam owners or even peasants had sold some of their land to Ceylonese or European planters?
Oh yes, the villagers had sold most their amount of land to planters.
Mm-hmm. Did you come across cases where a villager had sold the same plot of land to two different people?
Mm. No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
In that respect, they are the honest. They didn't try to do that.
Mm-hmm. Did you know if sometimes villagers sold a section of their land and got capital and used it to develop the rest of their land? So in this case, it wouldn't have been merely a foolish sale.
No, the most of their trouble was that they used to have so many co-owners.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not allowed to do anything. One co-owner used to... wouldn't allow the other corners to enter.
Oh, I see. You didn't work in the Kegal district?
No.
Mm-hmm.
There were several lands like that sort of uncultivated because when I went and asked why? They said, oh, there are so many corners, we can't do anything.
And how did they survive then?
They are allowed, as a corner, they are allowed to pick a jackfruit or something like that, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that some of the peasants were working part-time on the estate?
Oh yes, number of them.
Mm-hmm. I know the traditional view is that the estates did harm to the peasantry, but I was wondering whether economically the seasonal work which the estates offered, especially the rubber estates, didn't help the peasants.
I think they did work because when they had no money, they used to go and work in the estates, get some money and come.
Mm-hmm.
It was just to satisfy their need, that's all. They don't go there for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And have you any idea what the relations between the planters and the villagers were? Was there friction? Cattle trespass and things like that?
Cattle trespass, yes. There used to be a lot.
In Bajula?
Not in Bajula. Very little, fair amount in Bajula, because they used to go from the village. Supposing a village is adjoining a state, the cattle used to go and then they get into trouble.
Did they shoot the cattle or?
No, they used to get the head hunter, take them to the court.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they shot the cattle.
Regarding settlement work, some GAs and AGAs used to complain that the land settlement department took far too long to release the village.
Yes, sometimes a village takes a long time to leave because these people never, sometimes they are not ready with their deeds, so they say we want further time to go in, to bring up our case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then they suppose there were not enough surveys to survey after settlement work and all that.
And what happened if, say, there were several claimants to land and they refused to accept settlement and they wanted to go to court? Didn't that also hold it up?
Yes. You settled it, but they say they'll appeal.
Mm-hmm. Now, apart from that, didn't settlement work often depend on a particular claimant saying for this agreeing to a contract, agreeing to some written, putting his signature on some written statement which said that for a certain consideration, I give up my claim to this land or something like that. Didn't you have that process?
Well, what we used to do was, mm-hmm. say, this is a claim, your claim is no good, so you better withdraw. Because generally yes. They withdrew.
They withdrew. What if they didn't withdraw?
I there's one, there's one man, I think, in the Kalagadra area who claimed a large hectare of land.
Yes.
Then he said Nindagama or something like that, because he rejected that claim.
He was a big bug, was he?
No, I know his name was, he called himself Sri Rahul or something like that. I can't remember, but he is not a very important person.
Were there a class of Ceylonese who specialized in land buying, who had bought up dubious claims and resold them to speculators and to planters, you know, sort of land brokers?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't
come across? I didn't come across, because they are too most and they knew, I think, in Kandin district, that sort of thing, wouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about Sabragamo, I can't say that, what they did.
I know you were not involved in the process in the 1920s, but in the 1910s and 1920s, the Koreas and others like A.A. Vikramasinghe criticized the British land policy and said that the land settlement department is claiming, using the Wastelands Ordinance to claim land for the Crown and selling it to planters.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they said of the land settlement department. And I was wondering whether in some of the old deeds and things that you examined, you had found that this was so.
No, I didn't come across any at all.
I presume you were doing a new area, not an old area.
No, for new areas.
Mm-hmm. What is your impression about the land settlement department in the earlier period?
You mean before I joined?
Yeah, before you became an assistant settlement officer. Say in the 1920s and
1910s. I don't think I went into that question at all.
Mm-hmm. For instance, when you were in Bajula, There was no settlement work there.
I don't think so.
And in doing your settlement work, did you act according to instructions from the center or?
No, our settlement officer was Jayant.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't bother. He said, go and do what you like. Just see that you do justice, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
So very seldom he had to deal with our cases if he had made wrong decisions.
So what would you say were the principles you worked on? Were there any principles?
No principles. We had to decide whether the claim was good or not against him. Not it went crown.
I know there was no Chenalan in your district, but how does one determine a claim to a Chenalan, to say a Paravani Chenalan? If it's Paravani Chena, you don't cultivate it continuously. And therefore it would be, even though it's yours, the crown might claim it as crown land.
Practically all Chena land was considered crown. I mean, those villagers that these might carry any Chena or whatever, they couldn't prove it. So it naturally went crown.
Oh, you did come across villagers saying that it's Paravani Chena?
No, not in this, my area.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, in the NCP sometimes, they used to say that.
Oh yes, I know that NCP, they couldn't claim it as theirs. But I know that in the Canyon districts, in the 19th century, they had the right to Paravani Chena.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering how that worked in the 20th century. What was the work you had to do as a AGA emergency in Corona?
Chiefly to see that there was cultivation, especially of rice.
This is a new post, wasn't it? Emergency.
Yes. Emergency went to the war.
And you were supposed to boost the production of rice.
Mm-hmm.
How?
Like going and seeing that the lands are weeded properly. I mean, that the people are doing work there, not leaving the land idle.
And what happened if they were leaving the land idle?
Well, we tell them, if you don't cultivate this in the next few months, government will take over and get it cultivated.
Mm-hmm. Was that threat sufficient?
Oh yes.
Did you lend seed paddy and give?
Oh yes, we gave a lot of seed paddy.
Was it very costly to government, this attempt to increase cultivation?
Well, in that area where I was, it was fairly expensive because everybody was coming for seed paddy, of course. We can't tell if they are genuine cases or not.
Were you able to increase the production of rice?
I think that to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. A criticism has been made of this crash program in the war years and also about D.S. Nayaka's policy in general. Instead of they are saying that they set their targets too high. In that they never came near achieving the targets they had set.
Of course you can't blame D.S.N. Nayaka fixing the target because his duty was to get as much land as possible cultivated and as much rice produced because he didn't know at what moment there may be scarcity of rice. Of course, the people themselves didn't bother to follow up what he wanted them to do. Although we used to do it, but a lot of them were really idle. They were given their rice ration, that was enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that paddy purchase scheme then, I think.
Mm-hmm. It must have been rather difficult for you without any specific agricultural training to try and boost.
Well, I had an agricultural instructor at that time.
Oh, I see. And what did you think of D.S. Senanayake's agricultural policy in the 30s and 40s?
Well, I can only say about the Polonnaruwa area. I used to go there and see during my leave.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of fields cultivated, well cultivated, and they were making a lot of money in the villages.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this whole idea of colonization schemes, even in the modern context? Do you think they have helped in...
Oh, yes. They have helped.
In what way?
Opening up land and helping these people to get some money.
Yes, but the question is the cost worth the achievement?
Yes, because if you don't spend money and cultivate, get people to cultivate, give them land, you'll have to import rice, and then at a moment you may be have a war and you won't have any rice.
Mm-hmm. But can we ever reach self-sufficiency with the population increase and all sorts of other factors?
That. They say it should be in 1970, I think, that there is self-sufficiency, but the rationing scheme has been going on too long, you know, in my opinion. When I was deputy food controller, I suggested, say, after the war, keep it for 5 years and knock out the rationing system.
And what did they say to that?
They wouldn't agree.
Who is the they?
The food control.
Who is that?
It was Polia, I think.
And the minister was?
The minister was DSN.
And after that it was Dudley. Can you remember the Land Development Ordinance of 1935? And the new form of tenures that they brought into being?
I can't remember now.
Where they said that it can only be passed on to one heir, and it can't, that means it's preventing subdivision, and secondly, they couldn't mortgage the land and things like that.
Mm.
You didn't have to administer that.
No.
What did you have to do as an additional land commissioner?
Additional land commissioner, mostly. I did a great deal of work at the connection with the military lands in Colombo. That is, I had to decide where, how much of this land goes to the military and how much to the Ceylon government.
Military being
British.
British. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because they wanted, the Ceylon government wanted land for build-up.
Yes. And were the military trying to claim too much?
No, they get anything which is suggested.
Can you, coming back to the 1920s and early 30s, can you remember what the reaction of the British officials were, reactions were to the Dunmore Constitution and the grant of universal franchise?
I think by that time I didn't have much to do with any of these planters or officials, because I was from 1930 to 1935 was doing magistrate work.
Yes, you were in Putnam and Jaffna. But I was wondering whether, I mean, as PM Putnam and Jaffna, you would have met some of the officials. They didn't speak about...
No.
Personally, what did you think about the grant of universal franchise?
At first, of course, we thought it might be, most of them will be indigent and won't know how to exercise the vote, but I think towards the end, after a short experience, they picked up a very well.
And have you any sort of opinion on this executive committee system? What do you think of the system?
Of course, I think